Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, maybe something we think about more and more as we get older, but new research is pointing to just how important heart health in early life is, and how you look after your heart in your 20s can ultimately impact your future risk of cardiovascular disease. Preventative cardiologist at the BlackRock Clinic, Dr. Paddy Barrett, is here. You're very welcome, Paddy. And if you have any question for Paddy on heart health, you can keep them coming into us on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32 or text us on 51551. I was saying to you when you came in that this makes sense, but who in their 20s thinks about their heart health, you know, that they need to invest in it?
Well, I think a lot of people are thinking about it more, but
now,
in terms
of... Not, we didn't.
No, we didn't, but as the famous line goes, the world is under no obligation to make sense to you, and your physiology doesn't care about your 20s. It is absolutely true, but the reality is the biggest risk factor for heart disease is time. And that time being a function of exposure to multiple risk factors. And so the analogy that I make here is it's a bit like a pension in terms of the way you have to think about it. The best time to invest in your pension is in your 20s to get that compound interest. Because if you went to your pension advisor at 62 years of age with nothing in your pension saying, listen, I want to fully retire just using my wages in 3 years, your pension advisor would not think that a possibility. But that is largely what a lot of people do. They wait too much later in life and then they go to their doctor and say, listen, I want to retire healthy, but they haven't invested a substantial amount in their health pension. And so this is where the research really points to the fact that early investment in getting health metrics right has a huge impact on long-term health, insofar as that if you get it right from your 20s onwards compared to not getting it right, there's about a tenfold difference in risk in the terms of heart attacks, strokes, heart failure, etc. So it's an astronomical difference.
So when you're looking at someone's compound interest that they may have built up in terms of their heart health, you're saying to them, well, what were you doing in your 20s?
Well, it's very hard to get an accurate appreciation. If I were to ask you, I think you would give a rough idea, but you couldn't give specifics. But you can see the traces of that in terms of
the objective metrics
that we actually look at. So although we can't go back and measure them exactly, we can get a good idea. And the mistake that people make is they think there's a magic bullet. They're listening to various things online, thinking that this particular supplement is going to be what solves all your ails. It's going to be some magic trick. Treatment. But the frustrating truth is it's simple adherence to the basic fundamentals of health, not magic silver bullets, and just doing it right over and over again.
Well, going back to the pension analogy, I mean, it doesn't matter when you start, really, as long as you start at some point, and it's never too late to start. I know 62 might be a bit problematic when it comes to a pension or heart pension. But, you know, if you're in your 40s, your 30s, your 50s, you can still have a good go at building up a healthy heart.
Well, absolutely. And the reality is that if you look at the metrics that are important, things like physical activity, not smoking, being a normal weight, etc. For most people during their 20s and 30s, they probably will actually be spontaneously hitting a lot of those metrics. Maybe their diet isn't going to be great. You know, certainly wasn't for me when I was in my 20s. Maybe your sleep isn't going to be great. But what happens is as people move through midlife, life just becomes difficult and busy and hectic. And then the things start to fall apart. So I think for many 20-year-olds, spontaneously, they're engaging in physical activity and they're kind of getting enough sleep most of the time. It's as life gets really busy and things start to fall apart where the metrics start to go sideways. And that is where you need to start reappraising those data points and saying, listen, are things off track? Do I need to course correct? And do I need to maintain those metrics as close to possible as ideal for as long as possible?
Mm-hmm. And we mentioned this at the start. People in their 20s now are probably a good bit better at being healthy than we were, perhaps.
100%.
I'm generalizing there.
Well, no, but in general, yeah. I mean, if you look at it in terms of, yes, there's loads of statistics that you can point to that say not enough people are hitting their optimal weight or activity levels or sleep or take your pick. But increasingly, you see this trend towards an attention towards health metrics in terms of increased levels of physical activity. They're not high enough, but they're increasing. A greater focus on diet and exercise and tools that are available to us to actually solve those problems from much earlier in life.
Mm-hmm. Now, a couple of questions coming in. How are people with POTS? What's that? A high heart rate when you stand up?
Correct,
dizziness.
Yes.
On a high salt diet to look after their heart? Oh, so you need to be on a high salt diet, do you, if you have that?
Not necessarily, but it's often one of the things that helps people raise their blood pressure. What matters here is not the salt. What matters is the exposure to high blood pressure. So often people will approximate a high salt diet with high blood pressure and therefore worse health outcomes. But it's not the salt. It's the blood pressure that's the problem. But for someone who has very, say, low blood pressure, who requires some additional salt, you know, that's not a problem if they're maintaining normal blood pressure.
So that's not going to impact their heart as long as the blood pressure doesn't go too high.
Correct.
Okay, so Anne shouldn't worry about that. My son, who's 26, goes to the gym. He's in good shape, but he eats big meals and snacks, including raw eggs all day. Is that bad for his heart?
I say good for him. The reality is that if you're looking to burn a lot of fuel and build muscle, which is metabolically very expensive, you need a lot of input. You need a lot of food. So if you're a male in your 20s and you're trying to get big and strong and add lots of muscle, you need lots and lots and lots of fuel. A lot of that will need to be protein, and eggs are a great source of protein.
Yeah, so good, as long as it's good food and not, you know.
Well, not necessarily even. I mean,
really?
You're just looking, well, yeah, I mean, for the most part, like, yes, you want to get proper protein and fiber, but what you're looking for is adequate fuel, you're looking for adequate protein. Of course, it's going to make a difference from a performance point of view if you're just eating McDonald's. But most people just need fuel.
Okay. But that's an interesting message. So you're not overly concerned with what he's eating.
No, not at all. And even if you look at the processed food literature, there's no doubt that high levels of processed food are particularly bad. But when you correct for the number of calories that people are consuming in excess of their burn, the impact of processed foods are not as, I think, substantial as people think. So the big issue with processed foods is that it is very, very easy to consume way in excess of your caloric intake.
Yeah, you see, there's so much about ultra-processed food now. There's a lot of noise about it. Joe Wicks had a documentary in the UK and it has really divided people on ultra-processed food. Where do you stand on it?
I think if you look at the literature, it's quite clear. If you consume excess calories, this is where the majority of the health negative impacts come from. There is some evidence to say that highly processed red meats and sugar-sweetened beverages do carry some additional risk. But for the most part, most of the processed foods that people consume, if they are consumed within a calorie-controlled diet and otherwise balanced diet, I believe that the excess risk that they carry is minimal.
So if you're eating, I don't know, 2,000 calories a day and it's all rubbish, what I would classify as rubbish, that's okay?
Well, no, because you're eventually going to run into problems around fiber. In terms of just say bowel function and other aspects, in terms of whether you're not getting enough protein, in terms of for maintenance and building of muscle mass. But it's very hard to do, but if you eat a processed food diet that balances out kind of your calories and eats and you get enough protein, most people's health metrics will actually get better.
What about fruit, fresh fruit and vegetables and all of the good stuff?
The literature here around fresh fruit and vegetables is pretty clear. Is the more that you eat, the better the outcomes. But it's largely driven by the fact that you're not eating other stuff that's calorically dense and nutrient poor. And, you know, clearly, if you eat kind of processed food, highly processed foods over long periods of time, you will run into micronutrient deficiencies, kind of reduced fiber. But for the most part, I think if people are eating a balanced diet within a calorie controlled diet and have some processed food in their diet, it's not a big problem. Mm-hmm.
But if you're eating processed food all the time, you're not going to be full and you're probably going to eat more calories than you should.
Correct. And the evidence is crystal clear on that.
Okay. Now let's come to some more questions. Should a 20-year-old with high LPA be screened? That's high cholesterol, is it?
Not exactly. LPA is a type of cholesterol. So the analogy that I often use here, if you're thinking about cholesterol, you're throwing a tennis ball at a glass window. If you have LPA, you're throwing a golf ball. So it's a stickier form of cholesterol. However, it is a type of cholesterol that is the most common genetic cholesterol disorder in the population, impacting 10 to 20%. So when I hear someone saying, I have, dad had a heart attack at 50, his dad had a heart attack at 50, his brother had a heart attack at 50, the likelihood is they have an elevated LPA, which stands for lipoprotein A, which is a specific cholesterol disorder. It is not detected on a standard cholesterol panel, and we check it in about 1% of patients globally, which is terrible, given the fact that it impacts 10 to 20%. The question, however, is should this person be screened? And what they, I think, are referring to is additional heart tests, such as a cardiac CT, for example. I think 20 is a little bit early in life. Obviously, there are other kind of factors around this, but it means that that person has a cholesterol disorder. However, the treatments that are coming online for that are likely to absolutely revolutionize this disorder in the next 2 to 3 years.
What's coming?
So antisense oligonucleotide therapies, that is a big mouthful.
It is.
Small interfering RNAs can reduce the levels of Lp(a) by 90 to 100%. The question that we are asking is, in high-risk individuals with this cholesterol disorder, will these therapies ultimately reduce heart attacks? And the answer is likely going to be yes, but we will find out very soon.
Right, so that's coming down the tracks in a matter of years?
The results are expected to be published this year, and there are other many other trials in phase 1, 2, 3 and ongoing for multiple different therapies to tackle this very specific disorder.
Time for a quick one here. Can you ask Paddy how much caffeine per day is dangerous for the heart as a 24-year-old in general good health?
So this is the caffeine coffee question. In general, if you kind of consume moderate amounts of caffeine, so kind of 2 to 3 cups of coffee per day, it is generally associated with better health outcomes. Likelihood of living longer, reduced heart disease, sometimes even kind of reduced cancers. However, if you're drinking more than, say, 5 to 6 and above cups of coffee per day, it is associated with worse outcomes. However, I would also ask, if you're drinking 5 to 6 or coffees a day or more, there's a lot of other things that you're likely doing that are not going to be good for your health. So it's not just down to the caffeine.
What else might you be doing if you're drinking 5 to 6?
Well, if you're drinking 5 to 6 cups of coffee, you're probably not getting enough sleep. You're probably living a lifestyle that isn't doing any exercise, or probably choosing the wrong foods.
This is the inquisitive mind of the doctor. Thank you so much, Paddy. Good to have you in. That's Dr. Paddy Barrett. We'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.